Welcome to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President, CEO of The Wine Growers. We're here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, enjoy wine, food,
and
travel.
Sugary snacks.
Sugary snacks.
I know. I'm just going to sell us out this afternoon, right? You're over there with cola gummy.
Yes, Coke bottles.
Bottles. Yeah.
Yep. Gummy Coke bottles. And one of my favorite candies.
And then you shared your Mentos with me, which is fabulous. So I think we're totally ready for a wine tasting that we've done that.
Don't forget there's Smarties in case we need those later.
I think we're going to always need those on the show just to give us a little boost. Anyway.
Well, none of those really represent Earth Day.
They do not.
So, which is Monday.
I know.
So that's why we're getting them out of the way now, because on Monday we're just going to eat sprouts and
only things fresh,
lettuce
from the earth,
maybe a little kale.
I think I could have an apple,
a little seaweed.
Maybe I'll go with fruits and let you deal with the leafies.
no shade plants. So happy almost Earth Day.
I know,
big deal.
It is a big deal. You know, we've. As our farmers say, they celebrate Earth Day every day because, you know, they depend and rely and steward our land. But it is an exciting time for Sonoma County wine growers because we're in our decade of our sustainability commitment. So, and not that they weren't being sustainable before, but a decade of our formal region-wide commitment to sustainability. So it's an exciting time.
It is. I mean, you know, a decade in farming, probably, especially in Sonoma County, we've had so many guests that are multi-generation, go back hundreds of years, including later in this program, we have a guest that defines that. But yeah, so it feels like not a long time, but
I know.
In the wine industry, 10 years, a lot can happen.
A lot can happen. Yeah, and I think, you know, we talk a lot about now, as any sort of business or brand, if you don't have sort of a value system connected to sustainability, you're probably very disconnected from your consumer and even probably your employees and what is a good thing to do for business. But a decade ago, especially in wine, we were talking about sustainability a little bit, but no one was really putting themselves out there in such a formal way, saying we're going to try to actually kind of create a movement because we think it's the right thing to do before anyone asks us to do that. Mm-hmm. So I think that's why I'm so proud of our local growers and vintners, that they really embraced a formal sustainability program, 140 best management practices, continuous improvement, auditing, third-party audit. I mean, it's not a small thing. So, and when we announced we had hit 99% in 2019, it was a pretty exciting day and still is. So there you go.
And did you have Mentos or, Coke bottles on hand?
I think we had a lot of wine, actually.
Well, let's
appropriately
hope
so. Grown with sustainable grapes, of course. So
10 years in now, a big part of the Sonoma County Wine Growers, you know, mission going forward is based around a lot of partnerships.
Yeah. So we kind of said, what's next with this foundation of sustainability, and really sort of envisioned what's the farm of the future. And, you know, you've been active with us in welcoming collaboration and partnership to our local region. And in fact, we just had John Deere in about a week ago. We have a new collaboration with them. The first to pilot a new, I guess, technology embedded in a piece of equipment, a sprayer called Smart Apply. And so we are testing that here in vineyards, and it's all about using AI LiDAR technology to turn on and off the sprayer when it sees and reads canopy. So basically saving on material, being more efficient, doing better, which is always the goal. Do more with less and always improve. So that's an exciting collaboration for us.
Well, and I'm really struck by their interest in getting into more what they would say specialty crops, right?
Yes.
They do such large types of agriculture all across the country, but you know, it's another testament to Sonoma County that this was of interest to them, and they felt like it was worthwhile to test some of this equipment.
Yeah, and so it's really exciting to be able to get the information, sort of the case study in vineyards, and continue to work long-term with them. They were really open. You were sitting there to hear what our grape growers really need moving forward, not just this, but what's next, that they can be a resource and partner for them. So,
right,
can't ask for more than that. That and a thing of Mentos, and the world is a better place.
Well, now I know. Now I know. Next time, maybe John Deere can partnership with our Mentos candy obsession.
We could do like maybe all green Mentos in a package and brand it, right? I mean, like.
I like that. Right? Yeah, and they're sustainable.
And they're sustainable because you consume them. So no waste.
All right. Well, we have a great guest when we come back on The Good Stuff. On The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone here with Carissa Cruz, and we are very excited to welcome our guest, Julie Pedroncelli St. John. She is president of Pedroncelli Winery and a third-generation family owner based in Dry Creek. I think your bio says you're a Dry Creek girl, so we will we'll get into your story. But welcome, Julie.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here. Yeah. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely.
So third generation is kind of a big deal. Tell us a lot. Let's get back to kind of the beginning of your family story in Sonoma County.
Sure. Well, it all began with my grandparents, Giovanni and Julia Pedroncelli, who had started a family in around Dunsmuir, California, and were looking for a place to put down roots. And they ended up finding this spot that was already a winery, but had been shuttered because of Prohibition, had about 25 acres of vineyard and a home. So they purchased it in 1927. So this will be our 97th anniversary year this year in July. And they bought this winery from a family who actually is related to another family in Hillsburg, the Fapianos.
As it goes in in Sonoma County and Northern California.
Yes. Very true.
Lots of ties. So they brought the young family, my Uncle John and my aunts Margaret and Mary Ann, and put down roots in what will become later known as Dry Creek Valley, but at the time, Geyserville. So we're located in Geyserville.
Julie, can I ask, and I don't know if you know, but why purchase a vineyard back then? Any sense of what they were thinking or what they were hoping for? Other than wine?
I've had to build a backstory. I think they thought Prohibition was going to end much sooner than it actually did, but it took another 7 years. But the good news is there was still a thriving vineyard. They could still sell the grapes, sell them to head of households who could apply for their permit, make their 200 gallons of wine, equaling 84 cases.
This is what we call the legal workaround Prohibition to maintain viability of your vineyards back then.
Exactly. And so once Prohibition ended, they basically dusted off the equipment in the winery and started into the winemaking end once 1933 was repeal, December, so two. We had to wait until the following harvest to actually dive into the wine. And the interesting thing is my grandfather applied for and received okay from the federal government to use the original bonded winery number, 113, which was connected to that winery that was started in the early 1900s. So it's great to have that particular part of the legacy.
So you're still there. Bonded number 113. That's amazing.
That is amazing.
I mean, just to explain, so bonded winery in California, so you're the 113th bonded winery in California is the way that goes.
Is it federal?
Yeah,
I think it's a federal bond.
So yeah. 113th in the United States.
Well, I just assume most of them were in California, maybe at that point. Because
many
would think so. There were some in New York, and there's a little bit here and there.
Bond.
But there's a pretty new. Yeah, Buena Vista, I think, holds one of the lower numbers.
Yes, they do.
Yeah, so.
Same with distilleries.
Yeah.
Yeah.
True.
Which I think there were some also in our area that were bonded that people found, you know, years later buried behind some part of their property. And it's kind of cool if you can still hold the bond. So, but when they were in Dunsmuir, were they farming in any way or what?
At that point, my grandfather had worked for a pretty large ranch in the Redding area, and that's how he ended up meeting my grandmother. And I think family ended up being in Dunsmuir, and that was why they stayed there. He came over as a teenager from Italy, so he worked in many different industries, the dairy, the railroad, and then finally this very large ranch. And how he met my grandmother at my great-grandparents' hotel in Reading was he grew vegetables on the side and then sold them in town. And that's how they met.
It's a good way to meet girls.
Yeah, I guess. We should bring that back.
I think there are farmers markets. Do people?
And there's also now farmers.com. So meetafarmer.com, I think, which just cuts right through. You don't even have to, you don't need the vegetables anymore.
An ancient dating service. Yeah. Still relevant. Yeah. Okay. So they made their way here. Did they, because there was already an Italian community here in the area, wasn't there not?
Yes, there was a pretty strong one. Before Prohibition, there were many Italian families who had moved into the area and started their wineries or started vineyards, starting around the 1890s is about when they started to come to the area, of course, following the gold rush. And that was the whole move for people pushing out into the upper North Bay areas.
So, yeah, they found a welcoming community, and probably a lot of their cultural practices were still here.
In fact, Italian Swiss colony was just up the road, and there were quite a big Italian family community up that way, up in Asti. And so, yes, they found their home, and they found their people. Yeah, definitely in the area.
I love that.
So, what was actually planted on the vineyard at the time? Do you have those records?
It was Zinfandel for the most part, along with the usual suspects of what they used to field blend, which Golden Chasselas, a little Carignan, a little Petit Syrah. Mm-hmm. So all of that was mixed in, but it was mostly Zinfandel, head pruned, of course. And,
yeah.
St. George rootstock that was so famous in saving a lot of the vineyards in the area. So, yeah.
I love a familiar story in Sonoma County.
Yeah, very.
Italian family moves, they plant Zinfandel. And here we are with amazing Zen.
And a lot of it is still here.
In our county, which is how lucky are we to have that sort of history.
Mm-hmm.
So talk a little bit about growing up here then and sort of your family line and how you're still in this business and all those decisions and choices. And
yeah, well, when I was growing up, there weren't that many winery families. I mean, there's really... At the time, there was a handful. I went to Hillsburg High School, so there was a few of us there at the time. But I think things kind of grew out of my dad and my uncle, the second generation, building up the winery slowly from their parents to a much more wide-reaching. Mm-hmm. Jim ended up with building the sales and marketing network, and my Uncle John took care of the grape growing and the winemaking. And together, that partnership lasted for over 60 years. So they kind of set the pace. But when I was in high school, I was given the note that don't go do what you want to do.
Yeah.
And my sights were set. I loved books and loved reading. So I ended up going to Dominican and getting my degree in English with a writing emphasis, and was headed out in my mind to the publishing world. But things change. And I was living over in El Cerrito, and I was driving up on the weekends and helping out in the tasting room. Mm. And because my sister Lisa was going to have her first baby, and I was helping there. And I thought, This is kind of cool, going back where I grew up. And I mean, I couldn't wait to go away.
Right.
And then I came back, and my dad and I met in the warehouse one day, and he said, well, there is a spot here if you would consider coming to work for the winery. And so that was 1985, and I have been there for 39 years. And it is it's interesting. I immediately went in and jumped in and went to the JC, took a lot of night classes there. I started in the tasting room at the winery, so you learn from the ground up there.
So important.
Developed that network, joined lots of groups, the Wine Road being one of them. Mm-hmm. That was great because you met and networked with all the wineries around, and you basically, that's how I put my roots back down into Dry Creek Valley. Having grown up there, couldn't wait to leave, and then coming back, and now have had my roots set very deep.
Yes, yeah. I would say so.
For 39 years.
So what was Dry Creek like in 1985, 86, kind of when you came back? I mean, was it the tasting room well visited? Was there a lot of activity in the area? Were there a lot of people starting to put in their own wineries and vineyards?
Right. By that time, yes. There's a year that I always say that's kind of the wine renaissance for our area, and that was 1972. That's when you see a lot of families like Dry Creek Vineyard and like the Raffinellis, and even though they'd been there for a while, they have that kind of mark is there, this start. And there's quite a few other families, the Krecks, Mill Creek Vineyard. Mm-hmm. There's quite a few of them who were starting. And so by the time I got back from college, there was quite a well-established network of wineries in the area. So, yes, so we were quite busy in the tasting room at the time, being one of the few tasting rooms in the area that drew quite a few people. I'll also remember Italian Swiss Colony, you know, was still going strong up the road from us, and they were always an attraction for people. They were bringing people up in the 50s and 60s and 70s, and so that kind of continued bringing people up to our area. And of course, the wine road, very instrumental. By that time, they started in 1978, so they were also had a great collection of wineries, and so we were starting that network. Mm-hmm. Again, there's always been that wonderful kind of Sonoma County feel between our tasting rooms. You know, we send people back and forth. You know, there's that great sharing of the customers, mm-hmm. although we all, you know, would love to have them all to ourselves, but we know there are a lot of choices. And there's even more today. Yes. But in those days, we sometimes refer to them as the Wild West days. You know, we were learning a lot about what it takes to attract people to talk about our wineries and tell our stories and that kind of thing.
Well, I mean, I think it's pretty fascinating because I've had the chance to travel a lot to other wine regions, and Virginia, I know you have as well. And it's, you know, learning how to do wine hospitality, that really started here. It started in California. It started, you know, in Napa and Sonoma. And like you said, learning from each other how mm-hmm. we host and mm-hmm. invite folks yep. in and try wines and sort of open our doors and our homes and places of business. That was not a usual. I mean, we still hear from other regions now. They're like, tell us the model for hospitality, because mm-hmm. they're starting to realize that just relying on sort of a broker program and sort of on-premise, off-premise sales doesn't deliver the same personal touch mm-hmm. that it does when someone sits down literally in your, you know, your house, your room, and meet you and talk to you about your family. It's a really special experience.
Well, and being able to refer to, here are the vineyards just right outside the door of the tasting room, and talking about, I just did this recently at a dinner, we did the outdoor, you know, the view, what I've been looking at all of my life, and just telling the story of the vineyards growing up around it. And it's engaging for people to mm-hmm. put that, the dirt to the
right, yeah.
to the story. Here we are. These are the vineyards. These are the wines that we make, and they all come from right outside the store.
Yeah,
it makes it very real. I think Sonoma County, what it does better than anywhere else I've seen, is just that combination between being very welcoming and very real, and like, here's my house, and here's mm-hmm. what my grandfather planted, or here's when I got involved, but also still professional, luxurious. Mm-hmm. Like, there's still like a special element to it. So that's hard to do both.
It blends like world-class wine quality with this authenticity and mm-hmm. welcoming sort of, it's like, drink well and with a smile on your face. I mean, I don't know. It's like, it's happy.
And you really get to see, to really be, the vineyards are just such a bigger part of it, I think, than in some other regions. And that's important.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Definitely.
So what were some of the early wines that Petroncelli first made?
Well, the early days, it was barrels produced up and through 1947. And our first varietal on the label was Zinfandel. Mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah.
But my grandfather was experimenting in the vineyards, and we had Pinot Noir planted on the property at one point, and made that in the 50s. We made Riesling in the 50s. It was just, we experimented.
Yeah.
You tried to figure out what was going to do well. Zinfandel always did well. We made our first rosé in the early 1950s. We're our 71st vintage of rosé out of Zinfandel. And so, and then as things focused, and my dad and my uncle focused on what will, you know, would do well. We started to change what we were planting. Cabernet Sauvignon being the first in the mid-1960s. We had Chardonnay on the ranch at one point. All of the Pinot Noir and the Chardonnay and the Riesling have gone away. We had Napa Gamay on the property at one point. We had Gewürztraminer, Johannesburg Riesling.
Tried it all.
Yeah,
so you,
we did.
So you were trying it all so a lot of other farmers could learn from you and wineries could learn what was working in the region. But that was really important then.
Yes.
And
very experimental.
Yeah.
But the good news is you do find the right grape for the right spot eventually. And that's what we did.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk more with Julie Petroncelli.
Ooh.
On the good stuff. And before we took a break, we were talking with Julie about some of the grapes that you've grown and maybe don't grow anymore, and you know, watching trends change or watching preferences change or maybe just decisions that your family wanted to make. So tell us kind of what you grow now.
All right. Well, we farm 100 acres now, spread over three different pieces of property that were basically purchased. The original home ranch vineyard, we have the East Side Vineyard, and the Wisdom Vineyard over on West Dry Creek.
Wisdom Vineyard.
Yeah. I like that.
I like that a lot.
It that stems from planting the same grape in the same spot since 1965.
Oh, that makes a lot of sense.
And we replanted around 40 years in, because I like to say, I think that's where my brother-in-law, Lance, our vineyard manager, got all of his gray hair, or at least lost a lot of hair. It's hard to farm a 40-year-old Cabernet Sauvignon vineyard. And it was named Wisdom Vineyard in honor of my uncle, John, and all of the wisdom that you gain with the same variety in the same spot for so long. And in fact, they changed.
Story.
We went to a new clone. We learned a lot just with that one
thing.
Well,
you were pioneers in the Dry Creek Valley, for sure.
Is the cab on St. George?
No. The home ranch vineyard is where the Zinfandel is planted at St. George. Everything else is planted on different rootstocks to adapt to the different places they're planted in. So West Dry Creek is pretty much valley floor on that side, kind of going up a little bit, and East Side Vineyard, same. Mm-hmm. Valley floor going up into a very low bench. But the other grapes we have planted down in that area on East Side Vineyard are more Cabernet Sauvignon, where the Riesling and Gewürztraminer used to be, and the Chardonnay.
Naturally.
Yeah, so those white grapes made the way for a red. But the white variety we do grow is Sauvignon Blanc. So we have 11 acres of it down there, along with Cabernet Sauvignon, Merlot, Cab Franc, a little Petit Verdot. And there's a tiny bit of Malbec actually growing over on the Wisdom Vineyard. When they replanted, they put in about a half an acre of Malbec. So we have all five of the Bordeaux Reds. And on the home ranch, it's mostly Zinfandel, a little Sangiovese, some Cabernet Sauvignon, and we are saying goodbye to our Portuguese varieties. We had planted port there in the 90s, it did well, except the age. Mm-hmm. You know, at some point you have to just say goodbye. Mm-hmm. And so we're actually starting a whole replant program over the ranches. And so we're putting in Zinfandel where that used to be. We feel that that's a better fit for the area. And then we'll rejigger some of the other vineyards. So we have mostly Cabernet Sauvignon planted, followed by Zinfandel. So we have about 33 acres of each, out of the 100, mm-hmm. filled in with 11 acres of Sauvignon Blanc. We also have another vineyard, Bushnell Vineyard, that is about 4 miles down the road is my cousin Carol Bushnell's vineyard. And it is, we have been getting every grape from that vineyard since the 1940s. My grandfather first owned it and then sold it to his daughter Margaret and son-in-law Al Padroni, and they farmed till the 90s, and now Carol has taken over, and we help her to farm that, and it's a bit of an extension, but it's Zinfandel and Petite Syrah down there. So those are kind of, that's the scope of our grapes. You know, Dry Creek Valley has been home to Zinfandel for a very long time, and a little interesting fact I like to pass around is Sonoma County has the most Zinfandel planted in California, second only to San Joaquin, about 5,000 and change acres, and Dry Creek Valley has 2,500. Of that.
Oh my God.
So half of all the Zinfandel planted in Sonoma County is in Dry Creek Valley. So there is a, you know, it's been there for a long time. A lot of growers have put it in. It does extremely well. Again, speaking to that best grape for the best site kind of thing, and looking
climate,
at your soils and looking at your the climate that you have and that kind of thing, Zinfandel does very well in Dry Creek Valley.
But there's a bunch of stuff that's not Zin, which I think a lot of people associate Dry Creek Valley with Zinfandel. And you have a lot of Cabernet Sauvignon planted.
We do. And Cabernet actually is the most widely planted grape in Dry Creek Valley.
See, and I think that's a good bet to make with people, I think.
Yeah, no, I remember learning that at some point, and it's like, how come nobody talks about that?
I know.
You know, just because Dry Creek has become so well known for very high quality Zinfandel, which is which is a good thing, but it is interesting that there's still a lot to be learned.
Yes.
Yeah, and then the AVA just celebrated its 40th official anniversary as an AVA. Do you want to share anything more about sort of the appellation? And
Well, it's, you know, 40 years. That's something to celebrate because it's focused on our appellation. And just speaking to what you were saying, Virginie, the different grapes that are planted there, Krista, you may have said that too, there's now such a wide variety. There are Italian varieties. There are, you know, everybody's been able to experiment and figure out what grows best in the area.
And a lot of Rhones are there now too, with Grenache and Rhone, some Viognier and Roussan and Syrah, which is fun too. So
And so, you know, there's, I go back to reading about Dry Creek Valley, researching it at the Sonoma County Wine Library years ago for a paper I wrote
back
about
to your
Dry
roots.
Creek Valley, back to my roots. And, you know, Dry Creek Valley was touted as this, this is before grapes were a thing. It was touted in the 1800s as it like this, you plant something and it will grow. And I think they found that with grapes, that grapes were the right thing to grow there, following prunes.
Of course.
There's a lot of prunes when I was growing up there.
Can't forget that part of our history across Sonoma County.
glad that they're gone.
Yeah, me
but
too.
Happy the grapes went out. But the fact is, you growers can plant all these different varieties and find the right spot for them, and they do extremely well. So yes, Zinfandel, yes, Cabernet, Chardonnay, Sauvignon Blanc, but there's so many others that do well. And and celebrating 40 years just helps to put that feather in the cap that Dry Creek Valley is indeed a world-renowned place to grow grapes and does extremely.
So 40 years in Dry Creek, but 97 years of Pedroncelli. So talk a little bit about just the winery and, you know, how folks can come experience. What do they experience when they come visit you?
Yes, 97 years will give us a lot of
things to talk about.
A lot of stories to tell. My grandfather probably started the tasting room in the, I think, the 40s, probably the 30s, 40s, when people were coming up to buy wine. So we've always been a stopping spot for it. In fact, my favorite thing is having the grandchildren who were the young at the time coming in now in their 80s and telling me, I remember coming to your winery and meeting your grandfather. And, you know, that there's just that wonderful sense of generations of visitors over the years. And it's just wonderful to have that. But when they come now, they will be able to visit our tasting room and take a look at our home ranch vineyard. Our Zinfandels, our 40-year-old mother clone vines, are just across the road. And we will, if we're available, we will take you out and talk to you about those vines. But the great thing is you get to taste the wine, you get to have the view, you get to hear the stories of my grandparents, my dad, my uncle, and even my generation, or even the next generation, which is my nephew Mitch's. I mean, there is always something to talk about. The redwood on the walls in the tasting room come from the old tanks that were once in the cellar. And, you know, the tables that you, some of the big tables that you sit at are those redwood tanks that were, you know, so there's just so much history kind of steeped, even though the tasting room was built in the mid-80s. There's just still a lot to talk about from any vantage point of our history.
Well, I've never thought about generations of visitors matching the generations of farmers and family members and winemakers. I do want to just throw out there the website where they can come set up an appointment is pedroncelli.com, pedroncelli.com.
Yes, and please do come and visit. Our winery tasting room hours are 10 a.m. to 4:30 p.m.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will wrap things up with Julie. On air with Julie Petrocelli, and when we left, we were talking about some of the all the different types of grapes that you grow, how people can come visit your winery tasting room, and you've brought wines.
And I basically said I was thirsty when we went to break. What happened there?
That happens every break, just so everyone knows. So we're finally going to be able to open a bottle of wine that you brought. So tell us about. Let's open it.
All right.
Do you love that sound of the cork?
Yes.
Done.
Yes. There. Isn't that a beautiful sound?
My mouth is salivating.
Yes, we do.
I think it's like...
It's like Pavlovian.
Exactly.
Time for wine.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about this wine, and then maybe tell us a little bit about some of the other wines that you make that are particular favorites of yours.
All right. This is our Block 007 Cabernet Sauvignon. It is 100% Cabernet, grown on our East Side Vineyard. And it is the only one of the three Cabernets that we make that is 100% Cabernet. So one of the reasons why I brought it with me is just kind of nice to have that, you know, pure Cabernet, beautiful nose. And if I were to pick one that would be for the cellar, it would be this one. Because Cabernet Sauvignon does have a bit of that tannin to it.
We have the...
Sound effects.
Yeah. This is all about sound effects.
We need some steak, maybe some barbecue.
Yeah, I know.
That would be great with this.
Yeah.
But the vineyard itself is 35 years old. It distinguishes itself. So our winemaker, Monse Rees, she pulls these grapes in and gives them a bit of their own special treatment in that she watches which yeast she uses on the wine to bring out the best in it. She puts the right oak with the right fit to the wine. She uses French oak with our Cabernet Sauvignons, and it just kind of brings out the best in the grape as far as the using the right yeast and the right combination of new oak balanced with neutral oak. And I think it's just it's kind of a Cabernet that stands out. When you talk about Dry Creek Valley, I think we bring a bit of that, she calls it greenier. There's that bit of what's really the pyrazine part of the Cabernet Sauvignon really does kind of stand out. I like that. It makes it a little bit different when you try a Cabernet from our winery and from Dry Creek Valley. And some of the other wines that tend to be my favorites are Mother Clone Zinfandel. I love it because it's made in the tradition of adding some Petit Sirah to it. Mm-hmm. And I love how Petit Sirah balances the Zinfandel. And, of course, I have two stepchildren, so I have to have two favorite wines.
Okay.
I have Wisdom Cabernet Sauvignon is my other favorite. I love Monse and how she treats this. She puts it in oak for 20 months, French oak, about 40% new. And the clone that I mentioned earlier is clone 4, so it's the Mendoza clone. So it is this deep, dark, wonderful Cabernet that really benefits from that long time in oak, and just that the beautiful French oak just brings out all the best in the wine. So,
well I was going to say, I mean, for someone that studied English literature, yes, you know a lot about winemaking and a lot about the vineyards. So, you know, and a lot about Dry Creek and just family history. So what advice do you have for sort of the next generation coming into the community or deciding if they want to stay in the community?
Yes. I say, you know, you got to find your passion, basically. And I know that that's kind of a tried and true thing. But if you don't have that, you're not going to find your way. And the other part of it is having the plan.
Yeah.
We may all
passion
love
with a plan.
Passion with a plan. You got to have the backup and immerse yourself in the whole thing. I have always looked at it as an adventure in wine and trying other people's wine. Try as many wines from as many countries as possible. Find where your passion fits and which grape is going to fit into that passion. Mm-hmm. I mean, all of those are very important. It sounds like a lot of kind of this ethereal thing, but it matters. When you tell your story, that's when the payoff is there, because it's all there.
Okay, she wrapped it up like so perfectly.
Like I said, passion with a plan.
I look forward to your memoir. I think that would be actually very interesting. So I hope you're working on that.
No pressure.
Yeah, no pressure. Or we'll work on it together.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
All right. Well, we want to thank our guest, Julia Petrocelli St. John, for joining us today. President Petrocelli Winery, third generation family owner.
Petrocelli.com if you want to make an appointment to go visit Julie and her incredible team and the rest of the family.
Thank you very much. It was a great experience.
All right, we are back to wrap things up on the good stuff, and we wanted to give another quick mention of Passport, Dry Creek Valley. What's the info?
Yeah, so if you want to visit Julie and Petrocelli, a great way to do it, it's actually next weekend. It's April 26th through the 28th. It's Passport at Dry Creek Valley, also a event with a very deep, strong history in our community. So love that, and you can go to drycreekvalley.org to learn more and purchase tickets. So go see Julie next weekend is the advice there.
Ask all the questions. Maybe maybe dig into some of the library wines if you know that's possible.
I think you should probably ask for that.
Okay, well.
Just insist.
Yeah. Yeah, don't insist. Ask
nicely.
Okay,
sorry.
Ask nicely.
Sorry.
Better things happen. But let's talk about what wines that we're going to enjoy on our Tuesday night.
Well, I mean, I did not know this because I've always enjoyed the Petrocelli Rosé. So I'm going to open a bottle of that. But on this Tuesday night, I am going to celebrate that it has been a wine that's been around for 71 years. Rosé in Sonoma County for 71. I mean, it seems like it's like so on trend now, but like they were so cool and so trendy.
They're cool before cool was a thing.
Like it's probably gone in and out multiple times, and that's how cool that is. So I am drinking the Petrocelli Rosé.
I think that's a good story, and I wonder if it's one of the first rosé of Sonoma County. We have to do some digging on that. We're going to do some digging. All right, in between our digging, I'm going to enjoy the Petrocelli P. Johnson Vineyard Chardonnay.
Nice.
From Dry Creek. You know, there's not a lot of Chardonnay in Dry Creek, or at least not that I usually don't think of. And so I'm going to enjoy this very much on my Tuesday night.
What time should I be over?
3 p.m.
Perfect. I was going to start with the rosé at 2, so I will just...
Okay. No. Yeah. You start with the rosé, then come and have the Chardonnay. Maybe there'll be some baseball on. We don't know.
Of course.
And good show.
It doesn't get better than that.
No, I know. What else can we be drinking?
I know, everything. Everything's in Sonoma County.
Bubbles. The Bubble Bell might need to make a reappearance.
I know, I was going to say, you haven't brought that in a while. But no, I do appreciate all the great wine we get to experience in Sonoma County. And I love the multi-generational family stories. And like you said, it's not a coincidence that our roots here include most of the families being here for generations. And I think that's one of the many things that makes Sonoma County such a special wine region.
And completely sustainable, if that
And completely
happens.
Sustainable, too, in celebration of Earth Day on Monday.
All right. Well, cheers to that. From Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.